Charm of Favor, Chapter 28.
Just about every book on leadership will tell you that the secret to great success is delegation. Billions of dollars are made trying to convince businesses to buy a book, implement a program, watch a webinar, or launch a new software application. The truth is that a successful student makes famous a teacher. Simple as that. A platinum-selling singer makes a great studio. An Oscar makes a great producer. They all have one thing in common. They're all wrong. From the very beginning of mankind on the earth, there is one principle that conquers all. Oh, the gurus and wizards will tell you it is determination that produces success. In the same way lottery winners convince more people to buy lottery tickets, success stories are used as daily motivational videos for tens of thousands of people buying licenses to be consultants and loading their laptops with lead generation software. The real principle of world domination consistently results from loyalty. Blood oath loyalty allows the leader to sleep when the wind blows. That is to say, the crime boss knows he will never face a day in court because his people are loyal. No witnesses will live to testify. When Eric Holder withheld subpoenaed information and refused to answer questions that might incriminate agents in his department, he was convicted of contempt of Congress. He was the highest cabinet official in modern times to be convicted by Congress of criminal activity. Did it matter? Not one single bit. Why? Because the Democrats have a mind that is single to the glory of darkness. There is really only one Democrat in Washington, and it is commanded to vote a certain way, nothing wavering. From 1848 until the present day, no Democrat has broken ranks with the DNC and survived past the next election. Some do not survive past the next sunrise. When a sovereign American like Donald Trump becomes president and seeks to transfer the power of Washington back to the people from whom it constitutionally derives its power, dark principalities immediately oppose him. The people have always wondered who that principality might be. Most people believe in God, or in some supreme being that knows all and has the power to save souls. But when you ask them if they believe in a devil or a demon intelligence that seeks the enslavement misery of every living soul, the answer is almost universally yes. Perhaps it is because they need someone or something to blame for the poor condition of their lives, a successive string of failures, or the scarcity of supernatural blessings that seem to befall them. Maybe it's a curse. Maybe it's a simple spell. Maybe, just maybe, there is some exiled immortal deep in the bowels of the earth who demands loyalty and promises mortal wealth and pleasure in exchange for an oath. Covenant. It is a covenant that few get the opportunity to make. For millennia, men and women have slain the person in front of them to get one step closer to the actual seat of power. But for the rules governing the direct face-to-face contact with this evil fallen one, the entire human race would have been hopelessly lost. No, the rules allow for a handful of men and women to make this oath to the Dark Lord, and for all the rest who would freely trade their poverty for talent, fame, wealth, and power over other men in exchange for their eternal soul, to make their pledge to a human mortal under his authority and command. The tools of loyalty are many, and they are more powerful than anything in the universe. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life are but mere weaknesses in comparison. Jealousy is so powerful that it can bring down angels and gods. The desire to rule over other humans has been the driving force behind nearly every war mankind has fought. In the struggle for worlds, men are incorporated as the primary force and command. Were it not so, demons would conscribe the mortal occupants of all worlds as easily as humans domesticate sheep. The governing rules are tied to the very energy that resonated to make third-dimensional matter. That is to say, the instant gods or demons begin to circumvent the free will of mortals, the entire universe would disassociate and go back to the chaos of singularities from which it came. What is also known is that the souls who earned the lineage of the seed of Adam progress on a different slope than demons or the seed of Lucifer. As it is written, they are created a little lower than the angels, but their potential is unlimited, far greater than any angel. Few mortals there be with a concept of the exaltation of a soul. Knowing the potential of the mortal soul, who can understand the choice of darkness over light made by the mightiest men of earth? The future is a reasonable speculation, Mr. Lim, said the voice. I am well aware of the possibilities, but there are probabilities to be considered as well. Our artificial asset is calculating by the microsecond and revealed a strong possibility that our Mr. Kassam has been identified and located by the enemy, said Lim Shun. A distraction is in order, perhaps? Asked the voice. If you're asking if we can use a distraction to get him to the target, no. Nashville will most likely escape, said Lim Shun. He's a wounded wolf, said the voice. He won't abandon the chase, if that's what you're implying. The device is designed to be effective up to 500 miles, said Lim Shun. Air Force One is in the air. Both of them, said the voice. All according to plan, said Lim Shun. Not all, Mr. Lim, said the voice. The president is aboard, along with his cabinet. All possibilities have been considered, said Lim Shun. Your confidence in your assets may be your only weakness, Mr. Lim, said the voice. Their snake is useless without its head, said Lim Shun. Your team is ready? Asked the voice. The media has been cued, and the scripts have been written for the Democrat team to assume leadership once the operation is completed, said Lim Shun. And what of the people? Asked the voice. Placing 2/3 of the country in soup lines allowed us to lay the foundation for our government inside the American Republic 85 years ago, said Lim Shun. Yes, even my superiors were impressed. The world's greatest economic powerhouse brought to its knees in just a few days without firing a shot. Mr. Harry Hopkins raised the bar for breaking the will of a republic, said the voice. Pretty impressive, considering there was no artificial intelligence at the time. It was among your finest work, sir, said Lim Shun, carefully choosing his words. I accept your accolades, Mr. Lim, but this time it is your work. Delegation is not always a clumsy tool, said the voice. We all start somewhere, sir, said Lim Shun. Well, let's start by getting our Operation Dewclaw to accomplish the mission, said the voice. If you will excuse me, sir, there are decisions to make, said Lim Shun. We shall be waiting, said the voice, and the eagle on the screen faded to black. The news media mergers took decades to accomplish. It was a nearly trillion-dollar war that was fought for the power to control the news and information Americans received. Warner Communications merged with Time in 1990, Within 3 years, the internet threatened to tear the attention of Americans away from the steady feed of propaganda and exclusive content by which the syndicate placed Bill Clinton into office in 1992. Americans were confident if they could win the game by merging AOL and Time Warner in the largest mega-merger in history worth more than $146 billion. The world's largest browser provider took control of the world's largest cable and news provider. The events of September 11, 2001 only made Americans thirst that much more for alternative sources of news, and AOL was directly connected with an audience that was growing exponentially. The syndicate would not let this effort succeed. A few months later, in early 2002, Bill Clinton made the public declaration that he had instructed the Department of Justice to sue Microsoft under the Sherman Antitrust Act to break up their monopoly on internet browsers. The plan was successful in crushing the runaway rise in internet businesses and smashing the mega merger into the biggest financial blunder in merger history. There was no question that Donald Trump had single-handedly unraveled the globalist plan to bring America to its knees and then to surrender. If Hillary had been elected, America would have been rolled onto its side and been branded with the global seal of ownership. Its armed forces would have been merged with those of the UN. Its treasury would have fallen under the financial control of the crown. Its system of education, healthcare, and media had already been surrendered. But as predicted by a handful of statistical analysts, Hillary was defeated. For 30 years, Trump had been planning and refining his platform in the private sector while building a multi-billion-dollar empire of success with more than 500 businesses. Hillary crafted her platform by selling official influence to world leaders for billions of dollars. She had sold so much of America and so much of herself that she could not articulate her policy to a single reporter. The change in leadership was apparent within hours of his Republican nomination as candidate. Even with the debate questions in advance, Hillary was a disaster in the televised debates. She was no match for Trump's boardroom experience, and he seemed unaffected by the charm of favor. His inauguration was like nothing ever stated in any speech by any leader, transferring power not peacefully from one party to another, but from Washington to the people. He knew perfectly well that the syndicate had succeeded in merging both parties into one, with the single purpose of subduing the people. He also knew his policies would break the dam, holding millions of Americans back from their potential success. America roared forward, adding $5 trillion in value to the stock market and pulling the entire world with it. The global media and elites beat their breasts and slashed their skin in protest. It must have satisfied the dark demon who protected them, because somehow not one single officer or soldier in the Clinton crime syndicate was indicted, or even accused, for the embezzlement, graft, sale of national security secrets, or the use of U.S. intelligence agencies and bureaus as professional surveillance and evidence management services designed to destroy Donald Trump and his family. They were not, however, prepared for a national law enforcement program focused on pedophilia. Thousands of the DNC's soldiers were indicted for the heinous crime of child molestation. As the Attorney General knew all too well, the rite of passage into the syndicate. They were all guilty, and relied on the syndicate to maintain their immunity from prosecution for a nominal fee. Those who were current on their donations were spared, while delinquency garnered betrayal. Still, America might not be totally crushed when the lights were turned off, if its national leader survived to show them the way back. One thing that history has repeatedly shown, however, is that catastrophes are opportunities for those who are prepared. And of course, the best way for preparation to meet opportunity is to be the cause of the catastrophe. Thanks, here. I need that aerial image, and I need it 5 minutes ago, said the general into her phone. Ma'am, the drone should be over the target within the next 10 minutes. The sky is clear, so the images should be very clear, said the duty officer at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. They're approved to send. Don't call me back, just send the images, said the general, ending the conversation and pressing another button on her phone. They had practiced this 100 times, and the time that James had just bought with a construction contractor outside of Spring Hill, Tennessee, at least was going to keep the device out of Nashville long enough to take countermeasures. General Banks entered the next number into her phone. Space Command, Colonel Napier, was the answer. Jake, Banks here. When is the NORC satellite in range? Asked the general. It will be in line of sight from the southwest, 09-12-46 at 15 degrees altitude, said Colonel Napier. How long until the window closes? Asked the general. The Kwangmyong Song 4 will be out of range of Nashville, Tennessee at 09-14-58, ma'am, said Colonel Napier. Right. 2 minutes, 12 seconds. Thanks, Jake. I have 2 hours to save the world, said the general, ending the call. She placed the receiver on the desk and rubbed her eyes with both hands. It had been more than a day and a half since she had slept. Jack was on her feet, but looked like she'd jumped out of a plane without a chute. Tommy could sleep 5 minutes at a time for days. Rocky never slept. Training was good for keeping people from wondering what to do, but no training can get you ready to lose 1 million people. She picked up the receiver on the first ring. Banks here, she said, doing her best to sound alert. I want you to be among the first to know, said the male voice on the other end. What do you have, Jim? Asked the general, recognizing the lisp on the other end. We've had a few more NORC defectors. I have to give them credit, the little shits. I can't tell if they're really good running backs or the NORCs at the DMZ are lousy shots. We have learned that they have subs deployed near Greenland, said Jim. I'm not going to ask you how they knew. I don't have the time to hear about it, said the general. Yeah, well, you're not going to like this either. They have strapped 12 man pads together inside sub-launched missiles. They can get the missile to 30,000 feet PDQ and then deploy the ordnance, which can acquire a bomber's heat signature and take out the engines, said Jim. I know you think those 4 stars and your proximity to the president gives you the right to control the need to know, Marine. But where do they get the man pads? Asked the general. You know damn well they came from Benghazi, said Jim, raising his voice a little. I know that, Jim. If I'd been approved to sink that damn freighter, Hillary wouldn't have gotten them to Syria. What I'm asking is, how the hell did they get from Syria to North Korea? Asked the general. We're still working on that one, but we suspect it might have something to do with a couple of pallets of cash Obama had secretly flown to Iran in the middle of a cold night in January 2016. I'm sure there were more than $1.8 billion when the trucks left the warehouse. Flynn is the best spook I know, and he's sure people along the way stuffed their pockets full. I also have a feeling that the people who skimmed that pile of cash have committed suicide by now. These guys never leave witnesses behind. Look, the important thing is we have to make sure our pilots know what's possible, said Jim. I have to assume we don't have a secure channel to the aircraft, Jim, said the general. We can use the Foxtrot system, can't we? Asked Jim. Ham radios? You want to keep Air Force One from being shot out of the sky using ham radios? Asked the general. Hey, it's analog. The syndicate's clunky AI that's stomping around the web needs ones and zeros to function. It doesn't like analog waves, said Jim. I can use the Foxtrot code. It's never been broken. I'm going after those subs. You can take that to the bank, Jim, said the general. I guess we can't help it if one of those Nork subs gets in the way of some test ordnance you might happen to drop into the sea, said Jim. Now, it's not like we could start a war or anything, said the general, happy with the Secretary of Defense. Keep me posted, said Jim, and she heard the line go quiet. He was a calm man in battle, and the results he got from his men and equipment were nothing short of kick-ass. He never spiked the football. She never knew of him having to retake a piece of ground. His NCOs used to say of him, "If we take it, it's took." It is not unusual for the Arctic spring to include a high, turbulent jet stream. Even a Boeing 747-200 is no match for a 200-mile-per-hour northwesterly wind. The occupants of Air Force One were seated and belted and holding onto their armrests. Even at 45,000 feet, it's easy for a large jet to feel like a leaf blown about on a dirt road. The fact that it was 60 degrees below zero outside didn't matter. Greenland was not far away. There's a time in every war, just before the first shot is fired, where the soldiers wonder if their commanders are afraid. At some point, the orders become the action. The judgment and negotiations give way to ego and to indoctrination about technologies and position, training and resolve. The fish and the birds are unaware of the hatreds of mankind. Or maybe it is that mankind is unaware of the natural balance of nature, which humans somehow refuse to join. Like playing a game of poker at a table set up on the railroad tracks, the locomotive will come, unfettered by the wealth of the players, or the winner, or the house. The train will come roaring through, and inevitably will pass, leaving no survivors. The X-37B is a secret miniature space shuttle with the most secret cargo bay in the world. The fact that this unmanned ship can change its altitude on command while on its year-long missions in space makes it particularly difficult to predict. One day it is overhead for a minute, and then the next day, two. General Banks has a team that loads the cargo bay with various instruments and weapons. There's hardly a single asset in any military arsenal that is less than 2 hours away from any target on the planet at any given moment. Only now has Sophia been introduced to its controls. Once air-gapped to a set of command trailers at Edwards Air Force Base, it was the first time anything other than a human joystick and an encrypted radio broadcasting system had ever been connected to this ultra-secret spacecraft, now one of the most experienced assets of the newly formed American Space Command. "Major Meade, can you come in here, please?" asked General Banks. "Yes, General," said the Major without emotion. "I want you to go visit Jack. If she wants to, take her to her family in housing." "If she wants to," said the General. "And if she doesn't?" asked the Major. "Tell her we've taken out the trash. Ask her if she's going to sleep all day," said the General. "Yes, ma'am," said the Major, smiling slightly. The halls of the Pentagon were empty, with the exception of an occasional Marine standing against the wall. He didn't like jogging in low quarters, but something wouldn't let him walk the shortest distance to the vaulted Faraday sections of the complex. Within a few minutes, unconcerned with the sweat running down his chest, he arrived under the camera at the door. It clicked inside as the Marine on the inside pulled the handle over and pushed it open. "Thank you, Sergeant," said the Marine, slipping past him into the dimly lit gray airlock. The inner door clicked and automatically swung open for him to enter the cubicle center, humming with activity. "Meade, Good to see you. Any news? Asked Rocky, shaking his hand. I'm here to see Jack. Orders, said the Major. In the back. She was resting last time I looked in on her. James is with her, said Rocky. Agent Larson? Good to see you again, sir, said the Major, walking past the cubicles. Major Meade, let me walk with you for a minute, said Mr. Larson. I'm going back to speak to Jack. Orders from the General, said Meade, barely slowing his long stride. I think we should land Air Force One in Greenland, said Mr. Larson. Land? There will be international concerns over command and exile, said the Major. I took care of that. Operation Bearclaw leased the land from Greenland. It's our territory. Just another base, Major, said Mr. Larson. Clever. I will inform the General. It could play. Anything else? Asked the Major. My source informs me that the DNC has gathered their team. They mean to take over. I'm not sure we have a legal way to stop them from setting up, said Mr. Larson. Noted. I'll let you know first, said Major Meade. How? Asked Mr. Larson. Well, let's find out. Hello, Jack. How are you feeling? Asked the Major, trying not to wince at the sight of her black and blue face, her swollen right eye, or the splint taped to her right hand. Well, Mr. Larson tells me I am the winner, so I guess I feel pretty good about that, said Jack, trying to smile while putting her left hand against her cheek. I've come from the General, began the Major. How much time do we have? Asked Jack. Unknown. If you want to stay with your family, it would, started the Major. Mike and Lucy will make sure Mom and Dad are okay. If you think I want them to see me like this, they hate it when I have black eyes. Trust me, I know, said Jack, brushing her hair away from her right eye. In that case, are you ready to get back to work? Asked the Major. Excuse me, Major. She is not a warfighter. What's wrong with your legs? Asked Mr. Larson. To tell you the truth, I don't think Knorr likes me. Besides, General Banks tells me the trash has been taken out, said the Major. I could use a Tylenol, but other than that, when do we leave? Asked Jack. Talk to your brothers on the way out, said Mr. Larson.